Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to New Eridu. Today is Saturday, January 1st, 2011, and this is your host, the voice of New Eridu. Thousands of years ago in human history, the city of Eridu was built in what is now southern Iraq. It was built by a civilization known as the Anunnaki, whose advanced technologies and civilization conceived, gave birth to, and nurtured humankind under the leadership of the Anunnaki commander of Earth, known as Enki or Ea. Enki's interest in and love of humankind is well documented in Sumerian literature, and in Eridu, humankind flourished. Had Enki prevailed in Anunnaki politics, and had his plan for his human children been fulfilled, humankind might already have taken its place among the civilized races. From the seed that Enki planted, deep within human DNA, that potential is now awakening. Now is the time for the sovereign, God-conscious human spirit, that miraculous gift of Source, to complete its awakening. It is time for the truth to come out, for the shackles on bodies, minds, and spirits to fall away. It is time for humankind to assert its sovereign right to stand as equals among the peoples of conscience. Welcome, Sovereigns, and Happy New Year. I hope y'all had a really great start of the new year already and have had some time to unwind and relax and reflect a little bit on what you want to do in your new 2011. I tell you, 11, that number, I just love it. I mean, potential, magic everywhere. And that's what's going to be coming out over this next year. Thank you for deciding to spend part of your New Year's Day afternoon in New Eridu. And a special thank you to the archives listeners also. You have New Year's plans too and intentions also. And I hope that this show will help you focus your intentions and manifest them in the new year. This show, I hope we can do a good call-in because I really want to hear what your intentions are. I want to hear what you are willing to manifest and to commit to do in 2011. And when I say commit to do, I'm talking DU, that form of do that means do to completion. So I really want to hear what your... This is way beyond resolutions. This is, what are you going to manifest? And manifest in the active voice. Now, we have a really strong basis to build on in 2011. 2010, what we did, 10-10, with the truth wave, literally has rocked the universe. Every group that I have run into, human and ET both, has been fundamentally changed by that truth wave. We don't realize just how much of our power we really asserted with that. We really took a baby step. It was a baby step, but it was a very powerful baby step into manifesting our full potential with that. And I think it's going to shock us when we realize just what we really did with that. it's probably the biggest thing that has been done since the creation of the universe. And I say that not tongue-in-cheek. I mean that very literally. Because we manifested a form of God consciousness that we hadn't manifested before. We manifested it actively, as opposed to passively. You can be God conscious. And just in the sense of recognizing it, recognizing there is source, recognizing that there is a higher way of being than what we are currently manifesting and what we are currently living in, being aware of something greater. That's passive. That awareness, even though it can lead to some really wonderful things and can make you a better person, is passive because it's coming in. You're looking out at it and it is coming into you, but you're not doing anything back. You're not responding to that except within your little 3D reality and within your own mind. You're doing everything on a very practical, short-term scale. You're changing your behaviors to something you believe is better and more in alignment with the more perfect vision that you hold. And that's why I think, remember back in the 50s and 60s, there was the whole God is dead movement? I think that's where that may have come from, was that they had kind of lost the sense of movement. And when a woman is pregnant, she's always checking to make sure her baby's moving because that's what tells her that it's still alive. And when the baby goes too long without moving, she's likely to give the baby a prod to find out if he's still in there. So I think that this was a sort of a similar thing with that. People didn't feel the movement anymore because it had become so ritualized and so formulaic that it no longer really had meaning and really no longer had a life of its own. It wasn't God that was dead. It was the manifestation of spirituality that they had in that time. And they hadn't yet managed to invent the new one, which is the one that manifested as New Age movement and more interest in shamanic and holistic practices. You don't have to subscribe to a particular religion to fall in to that new paradigm of how we're manifesting our beliefs. It's an attitude. It's not a specific creed. So I think that we are very definitely now in the alive phase again as far as our God consciousness is concerned. I'm hoping that someone will call in and we can talk a little bit about how we're going to manifest in 2011. I can tell you how I'm going to manifest. I'm going to take the truth wave that we manifested in 2010, and I'm going to take it to the next level. And that is to manifest that truth throughout my entire beingness. And let me tell you, this is proving to be a pretty scary thing. Because you know what's happening when we're manifesting that truth in the active sense and we're actually taking what we started and we're finishing it, and we're doing it to completion? We're creating. We are moving from that sessile, dead mode of God consciousness into an active mode. And you know what that active mode is? You know what its label is? Creator. We have moved from God consciousness to creator consciousness. That's huge. And I'm going to be playing with that this year. I don't know that I'm running ahead of y'all. I sometimes feel like I am, and other times I feel like I'm just the biggest retard on the planet, because it's like, I should know how to do this stuff, and I don't. I keep having to remind myself of the baby stuff. But I'm going to play with it, and I'm going to see what happens. And I may bring disaster on my head if I don't do it right, or I may put myself where I belong and everything work out. But what I'd like to do is just ground some of the stuff that we've been talking about over the last year or two and make it real. Walk the talk. I have a caller. It is Miss Sinistry. Hi, Sinistry. You're on the air.
Hi, Ketter. Thank you for taking my call. Wow, what a great show today. I'm right there with you. Thank you very much for sharing all of this. You know, I don't think we can make any mistakes. I'd like to say that. I think that you're wonderful in what you're presenting here, yet people, I think we can judge them as mistakes, yet we're always learning, and that is the kicking or the moving of the baby, is to understand that movement is not always nice and comfortable, and I think you're doing a great job in helping us to work with that idea. It doesn't matter. It doesn't really matter what we choose to do. And I really believe we have, when we focus on joy, that will be our experience.
You know, you got a very good point there. When I say I may bring stuff down on my head, what I really mean is that the 3D may come down on my head, not the larger sense of it. Of course, in the larger sense, it's everything's okay, everything's perfect. But making that transition between the old model of doing things where everything was fear-based into the new model of doing things where everything is creator consciousness and building without fear and living from the heart, that's a big one. And some people are not going to react well to that when they see it going on.
I think that when we're in this position where we have an opportunity to speak to people, to believe and understand that whoever is listening understands, and that when we help them identify and focus the vision, they will live there. I think that that is the trust, that they are hearing you. They have an opportunity to hear this program because they are there. They're beyond this idea that they can fail, that they can exist in a world that could hurt them, that they're learning to trust themselves, that I will choose good things for myself, that I will live in a world of joy, it is the practice, right? I mean, it's always been the practice, yet for whatever reason we speak it in such comfortable terms now. So on our daily practice just simply has to be to allow joy. And that's a pretty huge principle to live by.
Oh, I agree. How would you, in the next year, be reaching out to people and practicing what you just said? What steps are you going to be taking over the next year to put that into practice?
Okay. Today is the day. Like, whatever we're choosing to do on this day, is my understanding, is a reflection of what we will be doing the entire year. So to imprint my day, I am actually going to imprint every little area that's really important to me. So I've already made my phone calls to my children to ensure that they're part of the conversation in my entire year, because they live in another area of Canada. The other part of it is a celebration just with breakfast. This is actually new. I have never had champagne at home on New Year's Day, so breakfast, champagne breakfast was part of it, with beautiful frozen berries in it to keep it cold and the fizz, and it's quite beautiful. And I will go horseback riding soon on my horse, bareback, and to ensure that next year will be horse involved and riding will be a part of that, and a celebration of life. And as I ride my horses, of course, new information comes in, because it's so high energy. It's such an exhilarating time in my life where everything else stands still. So that will be a part of it. Then the other thing is, as I had been thinking about doing some things with YouTube and stuff, so I will be working on those things today as well. So that will also be an imprint for this year to come. And then two things. I have two books that have been sitting hiding, and so today I will journal as though I am writing the books, so that those two will come to fruition this year.
Awesome. Now, I probably missed a word or something that cut out. You're writing these books or you're reading these books?
No, I read all the time. I have two books. I have one children's book about Christmas that I shared with my son. I simply haven't written it and gotten it to publication as yet. So I will work on that book today so that it will be published by the end of this year. And then the other one.
Oh, awesome.
Well, thank you. The other one is a book about, it's really about us and horses and the intelligence of being available to the animals around us, the world around us. So, yeah, that'll be it. So you've heard me here on Ketter's show.
You have now committed to doing
these
things. You know that, right? You have public accountability now.
Yeah, I know. I love that you did that. I'm like, okay, I'll call in.
I love it. I love it. And it's all good. And regarding your books, you might want to contact me later on, because I have some contacts that I can pass on to you.
Thank
on
you.
Getting those. When you have your books closer to finished, I can help introduce you to people.
Excellent.
And how to get into the publication game. Okay?
Yeah. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Well, thank you. If you want to stick around on the phone, you can chime in later on, or...
I can listen from here if you wish, or
in case
there's something you want to ask, gosh knows what Synastry could tell.
This is a conversation today.
I'm only having fun. That's all I wish to do. So I'm teasing. I will mute myself there, Ketter, and you go on to your show. Thank you very much for listening to me.
Well, you chime in when you want to, because, I mean, that was a very valuable insight that you brought up. See, this is the kind of thing that I'm talking about with this year. One of the things that some of the channelers were talking about last year, and they used the phrase Q-tipping, and I couldn't understand what on earth they were talking about when they were saying Q-tipping. What they meant was, like, you take a Q-tip to clean out your ear or something, you're perfecting what you're doing. And
I'm still in the Q-tipping phase, particularly with the expecting to have things go wrong business, because I've had so many, I've gotten in such a habit of things going wrong because I had so much of it for so long that I forget that if I admit that possibility, then I've practically guaranteed it to happen. So I have to get myself out of that mode of even admitting the possibility of anything going wrong. That's all, remembering always that it's all perfect and just not worrying about whether something's going to happen. So I appreciate particularly that reminder, because that's not something I want to imprint on this show, is that particular kind of thinking. A few other things that I was thinking about as I was putting this show together was, I'll give you an example of the kind of predictions that I'm trying to avoid and trying to some degree counteract. Over the last couple of nights on the Coast to Coast AM program, they've done the predictions. They do a prediction show at the beginning of each year. Normally that's hosted by Art Bell. But in this case, I don't think he did it this year. I know he didn't last night. But they have people call in on that show, and they give their predictions for what they think the next year is going to be. And they also review the previous year's predictions to see which ones came true and which ones didn't. And it seems to be that that show has now become a contest of who can come out with the most outrageous and scary kinds of predictions. And I don't think that's a good way to start the year. I think we need to be concentrating instead on the things that are really going to do us some good. This isn't a contest for who can come up with the most shocking or outrageous or funny prediction. This is not a predictions thing. This is a manifestations thing. What do we really want to have happen? What do we really want to bring into our world this year? The nature of time is changing so much. I don't know that, you know, I don't even know how to explain it sometimes when I'm talking about how much it's changed. But I look at what's happened over the last year, and it feels almost like there was 5 or 6 years compacted into 1 year. The amount of change, the pace of things, it was just flying by. And I feel like sometimes I don't have time to breathe. I don't have time to eat. I don't have time to sleep, because there's just so much happening. And at the same time, it feels like slogging through quicksand, because it feels like, I guess, that we're more aware of the weight of the silly stupid stuff that goes on in the world that is really so unnecessary. I suppose we're just more aware of that. And one of the things I'd like to manifest in this next year is freedom from that heavy drag of possessions and responsibilities that are meaningless. Now, we have responsibilities that are meaningful because they support a relationship, or because they fulfill a promise, or because they are a part of the work that we are here to do. But all of us have a lot of responsibilities that we've taken on ourselves that don't really belong to us. They really belong to someone else, and we're taking away their opportunity to do their own work when we take on their responsibility for them. So one of the things I'm going to do through this life, and actually have already started doing it in this next year, is going to be to make sure that I understand what my responsibilities are and to identify whether I'm carrying responsibilities for something or someone else that isn't mine to carry. And if I find them, I will put them aside. And I will also make sure that those that are around me are not putting their responsibilities on me, and vice versa. So I want to make really sure that everybody's carrying only their own stuff this year, and shed all the stuff that comes in from outside as much as possible. So that's my big goal for this year, is to rebalance all of those responsibilities. Last year I did a lot of work on karma, on rebalancing karma, making sure I didn't owe anybody anything, and to get guilt out of my life. I still have one area where I've got a little bit of guilt, but I can't really address that one right now because the other person isn't ready to address it. So I'm just going to leave that one hang. But I'll give you an example on some of the ways that our alien friends deal with that sort of stuff. I've mentioned in the past that I had contact with the Naga people. Those were the ones where I did the Nemesis show and I introduced them then. I haven't talked about them an awful lot since then because I didn't really have enough information about them to give more information than I already had. They're very private people. They're very in the moment. You don't drag in a lot of history. You know how you get person that they sit there and they talk about their history and you know every awful thing that's ever happened to them in their entire life by the time you're done talking to them? They are like the polar opposite of that. They live directly in the moment at all times. And they do not like to go back and visit the past. First of all, because it's not real fun. And second of all, because it's meaningless. Because it's not something that can be changed. And therefore, why dwell on it? They dwell instead on where they are and what they're doing at the moment. Which I think is really a lesson that we could all take. But they rebalance their karma just immediately. Because they're in the moment. And when something happens that has gone wrong, like what happened with the Anunnaki and the other Lyrans, was they basically just stayed there in their truth. So they didn't end up with the karmic debt. When you stay in your truth, you don't end up with anybody, with you owing anybody anything. Now, you may accidentally end up with the other person owing you something, but that's kind of the other person's problem. But it's also your problem because you need them not to owe you, because their attachment of owing is going to weigh both of you down. So when possible, if you're aware of someone owing you some kind of karmic debt, when that person is able to deal with it, try to help them deal with it and unburden both of you. I haven't come up with a good way of approaching someone about something like that yet. I sort of stumble around, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But there's got to be some elegant way to approach them and say, listen, we have an unresolved issue. You know, let's talk about it. Let's get it resolved. And have them understand that you're not doing this because you're trying to self-serve. You're trying to serve both of you. That both people, this is important to both people to do. So if anybody comes up with an elegant way of doing that, let me know. I would love to pass that on. Let's see, what else? Other things I'd like to concentrate on is to continue the wave of truth throughout all systems. I don't know how well I can support that. I pass on as much truth as I can find on this show and the things that I write. I have to wonder sometimes, though, if that isn't already starting to get partially hijacked. So my suggestion to everybody over the next year is to be careful. and verify your sources and verify your gut and your heart. Does it resonate as true? Does it support fear or does it support love? Does it support division or does it support healing? Ask those questions of all every time you come across something where somebody's saying, I have the truth coming out. Because it didn't take these folks very long to figure out that they could stick a label of truth and use the conspiracy mentality against those who have been labeled conspiracy theorists and conditioned to be conspiracy theorists, when really what they were people who had legitimate questions about things that didn't seem right. They actually have created a condition where thinking about things differently from what the program is considered aberrant behavior. And they're now leveraging that by saying, you know, here's the truth that's come out about this. And it not be. It'd be a way of sneaking disinformation in. So be careful over that over the next year. I'm going to try to support the actual truth as best I can. I think we all need to do that in our lives and in our spheres of influence. So keep your eyes open for what you can do there. Another thing that we can do that's really going to help in all of our lives is to discover the underlying principles of things. Why? Find out why things went the way they did. How do things really work? One of the things that we're taught in school is special cases of stuff. We're not taught how to do things in a, what's the word I'm looking for? A holistic manner. We don't go to first principles of things. We're taught little special cases of them. And that's why specialists are so greatly valued in this society, as opposed to generalists, even though when you give a job to a generalist, odds are that the outcome of that work is going to be better than the work that would be done by a specialist, because the generalist is going to take into account all of the other things in the environment around whatever that person is doing. And they're going to go for the highest and best outcome for all of the things that are considered. The specialist is just going to go in there and he's going to knock it out of the ballpark on the one particular thing. And if there's consequences in other areas, he's not going to see them and he's not going to take them into account and he's not going to care about them. He's going to say at the end when it turns out to have been a bad thing, he's going to go, well, that wasn't in the specification. So you notice what I'm saying? Specifics are a killer. That's how we end up with overregulation. That's how we end up with products on the market that are supposed to be better for us and end up being worse. That's how we end up with pharmaceuticals that are supposed to cure disease and instead just perpetuate it or even in some cases make it much worse. That's how we end up with that. That's specialist behavior. So try to find out what the underlying principles of these things that you want to do in your life are. And learn to act on those. Learn to take the much larger view and get out of the specialist mentality. Let's see. Other things that we can do. We can mind the old ways. We can look back over our history and what was working back then, what has been lost over time or replaced with something that we were told was better but in practice actually isn't. Look back all the way that you can to find answers. You need to improve your diet? Okay. What were people eating 50 years ago? Is that better or worse? What were people eating 100 years ago? 1,000 years ago? Just keep going back until you find the thing that you need. One of the things this year that I'm going to do to further my own, specifically in the area of diet, my own practices, I'm very much hoping to become food independent over the next year. And by that I mean have it where I can feed myself reliably without having to go to the grocery store. Now, it'd be nice to go to the grocery store, but I'd like it where I can reliably say that if I can't go to the grocery store, that I will be able to eat. So one of the things I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be taking a class in wildcrafting and learning what plants in my native area can be eaten. What can I go out and scavenge for myself during the different seasons of the year to keep myself alive if I have to? What can I teach others in my group what to eat and what not to eat? So these are little practical things that you can learn. Now, this knowledge was developed probably two or three times in the past. It was originally developed by the Native Americans that were living in the area. They knew what they could eat. They knew how to feed themselves. They didn't have grocery stores if they didn't hunt it down or go out and forage it for themselves. They didn't eat. So they knew what they could eat, and they knew what they couldn't eat. They knew how to prepare things. There's a lot of plants in this area that you have to prepare them just so, or else they'll make you sick. So all of that was stuff that they knew how to do. But that knowledge was pretty much lost, because when the Spanish came, they ran the Indians out. And then later on, when the Spanish probably learned some of this stuff from the Indians before they ran them out, or they rediscovered many of these things, and they were feeding themselves here. Miss Sinistry, I'm going to mute you because I can hear something going on there. Put a thing up in the chat if you need to talk. Excuse me, guys. Sorry about that. But it takes research to go back and find out who knew what when. And that's something I'm going to be doing over the next year, is that kind of research. Political systems. What worked in political systems? Have we ever, as human beings, had a society that actually worked? If we did, what was right about it? What was wrong about it? What caused it to collapse? And that's something that I think we all need to look at, because the academics don't have any real reason to want to understand what went right, because writing about what went right is not as dramatic and popular as writing about what went wrong. That's just, you know, they call it the reptilian brain. The reptilian brain supposedly only focuses on negatives. It's like, have you ever noticed you're standing outside in the woods and all of a sudden your eye darts over to something? And the reason that your eye darts over there is because your brain instinctively reacts to motion. Well, your brain also instinctively reacts to negatives and to threats. Same basic principle at work in both cases. Whatever's a negative, or whatever's a threat, or whatever's moving, that's the thing that's going to be the most interest to your baseline survival instinct brain. It's so, therefore, that's the glittery thing that's on the shelf when we go to buy a book or read an article. That's the glittery thing. The glittery thing is always going to be the thing that is the most negative. We've got to get out of that thinking. When you see it, you go, it's glittering, but it's fool's gold. It is fool's gold, and I'm not going to pay attention to it. I'm going to look instead for a positive answer. So that's something else that we can do, is finding out what worked in our past and stop worrying about what didn't work. The only reason you want to know what didn't work is so you don't do it again. And I'm sitting here hoping that somebody else will call in. And I'm sure somebody out there has got an intention for the next year, something they're going to do, something that they're excited about, something that they think is going to make a positive impact, and they want to share. Okay. I'm sitting here waiting for you. New Eridu is going to be on the air for another 19 minutes, and you have time. Let's see. What else can we do? Well, we can heal ourselves. We can heal our communities. We can heal our planet. Those are very, very concrete things that we know well what needs to happen. And of course, we have to work within our own sphere of influence. And if you want a larger sphere of influence, then that requires you to put more commitment into the action. But everyone, regardless of their level of commitment, can do something towards that. I think I'm preaching to the choir probably on this particular point. I think most of the people that are listening to this show already are aware of their environmental impacts and their social impacts of their decisions that they make. They know how to vote with their dollars. If somebody's acting unethically or they're bringing stuff in from a source that you disagree with, that you can try to put your dollars into a better position, et cetera. So I'm not going to dwell on that particular manifestation. But there's one that I think that we need to be a little more aware of. And that is, and this is something that honestly I kind of dithered on for a lot of years. That is healing source. I don't know if I'm the only one that sees this. I suspect I'm not. But when things went apart, it may have been on purpose. It may have been source's decision to have that parturition. I don't know if I'm saying that right. It may have been Source's decision to do that. But Source hurt itself to do that. And when things like wars and hatred and interpersonal stuff happens, Source is continuing to hurt itself. Every time we think a negative thought, every time we divide, that's like taking a knife to Source. When we heal wounds and breaches and conflicts and make peace and build creatively, then we heal Source. We're not just healing our local selves. This is really a combination of, you know, act locally and think globally. If we act within our own sphere of influence in a way that is healing, then we do heal Source. But there's a step bigger than that we need to work on. And that is to ask Source what Source needs from us. And a lot of people don't do that. Because Source will tell you. And sometimes what Source needs from you is kind of strange. And sometimes it's kind of scary. Because it may lead you in directions you never thought you were going to go. But you need to ask that question now, particularly that we are manifesting a creator consciousness, because that creator consciousness, we can create hell too, okay? So let's just not. Let's create what we want to create. Let's create a condition under which all of Source's beingness, and each one of us is a mote of that beingness, all of Source's beingness is in harmony. Let's create that. And realize that Source is never going to allow us to really harm one another. Oh, we can kill each other. Oh, we can commit heinous acts. But we're not really harming each other, because that soul part that is part of Source is always going to be protected. To some degree or another, is always going to be protected, because it's eternal, because it's part of Source. Now, Source is patiently setting its intention for us by protecting us from ourselves. It is now time for us to repay that favor by manifesting the things that Source wants us to manifest. And part of that is to learn how to get along internally and externally in such a way that we bring peace, that we bring love, that we bring healing. One of the things about the Naga that I talked about them earlier, but one of the things that strikes me every time I interact with them is how healing their presence is. There is never a worry about guilt or self-consciousness or am I going to get blamed for something. That never happens. Now, you get up in the morning, you put your slippers on, and you go out of your bedroom, and what's the first thing you're going to wonder about? Is the first thing that happens to me today, is somebody going to snap at me? Is somebody else going to be in a bad mood? Am I in a bad mood? You know? I mean, you get up in the morning, and you're worried already. You get up and you leave your house, and it's like, am I going to be able to get through my day without having a traffic accident? Am I going to be able to get through my work without making a mistake and having my boss yell at me? Okay? Those folks don't ever do that. That thought doesn't even enter their heads. Everybody does what they're supposed to do. If there's a mistake that's made, it's dealt with. There's no guilt. There's no anything. They heal. They heal each other constantly. They heal anyone who comes into contact with them. That's all they do, is heal. We need to become like that in our lives and in ourselves. And first, we have to start with healing ourselves in that manner. I think that's the thing that a lot of people miss, is how much they need to heal themselves. They figure that healing is measured by how much you're giving to others, and forgetting that you have to enable the enabler. And who enables you? You do. So I'm hoping we can take a lesson from the Naga and heal ourselves, learn how to heal as a community. Because that's all they do all day long, is support each other and heal each other and love each other to the point where they're almost a single entity. Not because they have any kind of telepathic or spiritual connection that makes them different from us. I haven't seen any ability that these folks have that we don't have. It's how they manifest it. It's how they use it. We stridently try to make telepathic contact and manifest these miracles. We stridently go out of our way to do great works in the world. These folks just do it. Whatever it is in front of them to do, they do it. If it's taking out the garbage, they take out the garbage. If it's healing a planet, they heal the planet. And one thing doesn't really have priority over the other, because all of them, in the end, is just what's in front of them. Whatever Source wants them to do in that moment, that's what Source wants them to do. And all things, therefore, are equally important. Can you imagine what this planet would be like if we were to manifest that? Let's manifest something like that in our lives. That each thing that we do is equally important with all other things. That will take so much stress off of us. As we sit here with our date books and our planners and trying to prioritize our day. No, we don't prioritize our day. We don't prioritize our time. We use our time to accomplish the thing that is in front of us. What is in front of us? What is important? What we need to prioritize is what's important. Once we know that, everything else will turn out. 9 times out of 10, the thing that you're most worried about is not the thing that's most important in your life. So consider how you're going to deal with that over the next year. The last thing I'd like to talk about today, if I don't get another caller, hint, hint, is the perspective that our space brothers love us unconditionally. Well, all Source loves all other Source unconditionally at some level. But there's something that comes from the old self-help books from like romance guides and stuff. And that thing was, people would ask, well, how can I get somebody to love me? How can I get somebody to want to be around me? And the answer was always the same. Become someone who is lovable. Become someone you want, that you would want to be around. If you're sitting around moping and whining and complaining about how bad your life is and how nobody loves you, guess what's going to happen? But, you know, the whole thing about misery loves company is only true to a certain extent. It's not going to bring you anything you want. It's not going to bring you anything positive. You have to become the thing that you want to be. If you want to feel loved, then you need to feel not only loved, but lovable. You need to feel worthy of it. If we want to interact with a more advanced, quote-unquote, species, advanced, of course, being a matter of perspective, if we want to interact with these other folks, we need to become something worthy of interacting with. We need to have it where we're not going to contaminate their race with our dirty thinking, with our bad habits. I mean, a lot of these folks, the answer I've been getting from them when I talk to them is they're holding back because we stink. And I mean, not just physically. Our way of thinking, our way of doing stuff smells to them. And they find it not only offensive, but troubling and potential. They're worried about the potential of our stuff somehow contaminating some of their people. And they're legitimate fears. We're better than that. We're way better than that, because I know when I talk to people, I hear that higher view coming out of them, that their higher view even if they're not manifesting it, is at least as high, if not higher, than anything else I've seen out there. A human being is capable of soaring to the height of Source directly. Manifest that in your life. Make that a priority for 2011, is learning how to draw down that higher perspective and make it manifest in your life at all times to become a being that is more evolved, more civilized, more aligned with Source, and someone you would want to be friends with. There are people that can look in the mirror and they don't see a friend looking back. And there are days that even the best of us are like that. We become our own worst enemies. 2011 is the year we need to let that go. That we need to align internally and externally with our will, and to decide what our will is and how we're going to manifest it. So, like, I'm going to close on the show on that at that point. Unmute Sinistry. I think I am. Sinistry, did you have any words of wisdom to leave us with? I guess I caught her away from the phone. In which case, I'm going to go ahead and close the show out with Inophonic from Red Light Orchestra.